This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
It is. When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to ELC. Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're sitting in traffic. Maybe you've got one more errand to run, and you just need some video games in your ear holes. Well, we're going to be with you for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free, thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. Their generosity, their support means we get to make these. And boy, are we grateful. In exchange, those patrons get some cool perks, including bonus audio. They get ad-free versions of the show. They get video versions of the show. So much extra stuff. They've got Feeling This, the show with Alex Solman and Christian Spicer, talking about the feelings behind video games. They've got the DLC Book Club podcast version. They've got our spoiler chats. And they've got that Wednesday paid DLC program every week, getting them through the hump day with some good times, fun discussions, all kinds of wackiness. People love it at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who loves a slip and slide, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
I'm a Crocodile Mile kind of guy.
What?
Because you run, you jump, you hit the bump, you take a dive. Come on. Everybody's got to do the Crocodile Mile. Come on. You're starting this show with violence. Violence.
I thought I was elevating you. I thought I was throwing you a layup. And no, you have to reject me with your Crocodile Mile.
Everybody loves a Crocodile Mile, man. It elevated the game of the slip and slide. Also, we have a great show. But before we get to that, dear adults, slip and slides hurt. I don't know at what age they start hurting. Yeah. Maybe it's 21. Maybe it's 27. Maybe it's 37. At some age, they start hurting. Yeah. Bear that in mind as we enter
summer.
Well,
it's the age where the verb slip has bad connotations. If you slip at a certain age, that's
you ain't
not a good
sliding.
Day.
It's a slip and break a hip, I think.
It honestly doesn't matter what comes next. If you've slipped, not good. Hey, it's summer, and we are, I think all signs point to the summer of games starting off early. We're going to get to that. We got a big show for you, because I think Sony decided summer has started in the end of May. Oh, we're in June now. But you know what I'm saying. It's all happening in the next couple of weeks. But we got so much to get into. We have some fun games to talk about. And we have an awesome guest for you, ladies and gentlemen. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, woohoo, I'm excited because DLC stands for Delivering Legends Communications. Because we have Senior Manager of Communications at Apex Legends, Sara Zaidi, with us for the first time. Hi, Sara.
Hi. How are y'all doing today?
Doing awesome. So delighted to have you with us. How do you feel like the summer has begun?
Not in the Pacific Northwest, but Sony is the arbiter of summer. They've decided it started. So really excited to talk about the summer of Sony.
Let's do it. We got a lot to get into. So let's start it. You know, usually I would say we would start it with our story of the week, but really there's only one story this week, and we're going to treat it like the summer has begun. And that means it's the summer of games.
It's the summer of games on DLC. You're going to get hyped up, and the news will live up to your expectations.
Or maybe it will. I don't know. You don't have to be as pessimistic as that guy. Let's talk about the summer of games. The Summer Games Fest officially not kicking off for a few more days here as we record. But as Sara mentioned, Sony has decided that's happening. And we had what I guess is going to be the closest we're going to get to a Sony showcase this summer. I don't know. We could be surprised. They could be having something else happen.
Yeah, maybe. Insomniac definitely social media'd out. May's over. Who's excited for June? And it's like, oh, Insomniac, what are you doing? I guess I am now. I guess me.
I don't know what to make of it. This did feel to me like what we're going to get from Sony for the summer. But in this world of everybody's got their own directs, I don't know. But we did get a state of play for Sony this week. And they had some really interesting games, interesting reveals. And so we're going to treat it like this is their summer of games. And we're going to step through it. Sara, you got a chance to watch this, or at least some of it, right?
Yes.
What would you say was, we'll step through all the games, but I want to say, you know, start off with kind of an overarching, your takeaway. What would be the one or two games that were shown that most, excited, interested you?
Not gonna lie, I'm a shooter girly, so Concord has my heart. I'm excited. I want to jump in, play it. Like, love the character interactions. It feels like really fleshed out, and it just, I don't know. I'm excited to jump in and check it out. Besides that, Infinity Nikki, we love fishing games. Just, you know, slice of life, be able to like log off of work, log in and just go fishing and enjoy the vibes.
Yeah, it looks like there's going to be some fashion in that game, too. Some, you know, it's got kind of some Pokemon Snap elements of it. Very interesting, different looking game, Infinity Nikki. But let's dive into Concord, because that really is the game that started off this state of play and I think made a big splash right away. Christian, you and I, where we grew up, we'd call it Concord. But I think most folks call it Concord.
I mean, but you can never trust a Californian's pronunciation of any city, because Los Angeles is one way, Los Feliz another way. Same loss in front of each. You know, California has a bad history with the names.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, Concord, a yet another hero shooter. Sorry, you're here. You work for Apex Legends, one of the top tier hero shooters. It's about to get real crowded in that market, it looks like. We got several of them in this state of play, and we know that evidently Valve is working on one called Deadlock. We talked about that last week. Anyway, Concord looks like you know, very Overwatchy, very, you know, it's got its own universe that they very, I think, effectively set up in this lengthy intro trailer that it kind of gave me some Guardians of the Galaxy vibes. You know, it's this team with kind of funky interactions and quirky, quippy heroes. You're digging it. You said you like the characters. It sounds like there is an emphasis on narrative here that is, I think, maybe a little more intense than some of the other games in this genre.
Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. You know, I kind of feel like game devs around the world kind of saw what was going on with Overwatch and kind of were like, I want in. I want to throw my hat into the ring. And as with game dev cycles, it's all coming to fruition now. So I'm never mad at more good games. Like, I think it's awesome. And, you know, coming from Apex, we love the sassy characters. We love the lore. So, yeah. You know, I'm like, yes, more, please.
Christian, what did you think of Conquered? I know that you and I aren't the hugest, you know, multiplayer FPS fans that just
you can just say I'm bad, Jeff. It's okay. You don't need to be like beat
you're
around
terrible
the
terrible at it.
Safe space.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Around the same time, a slip and slide started hurting my competitive first person shooter skills. Also went
that's
down.
That's the problem. So is my reticle slips and slides. That's the problem. but I mean, I think they put a really interesting foot forward here with Conquered. It's the emphasis on narrative, the kind of staking out of I thought the design and style of the world really stood out. It kind of had this almost like 60s retro sci-fi thing going on, like old pulp novels from the 60s. I thought it really has an identity.
Yeah, I also just really love the logo. I think it speaks to that of like what that identity is. I suffered a little bit of whiplash during the reveal. Maybe this had been announced before and I knew something about it before, but like watching that CGI or that, you know, the animated intro, I was like, oh, extraction shooter. Oh, or maybe like a actual Uncharted, like, you know, and you are just one character and this is your cast and crew and they're doing a space, you know, not Naughty Dog space game, but like a space thing. This is going to be so cool.
And I mean, it looked kind of like the Guardians of the Galaxy game that we both loved from a couple years ago. Yeah.
Yes. And then when it showed the gameplay reveal, I was like, oh, this isn't what I think that trailer set up for me. So I had to reset my expectations for it. But then rewatching just the gameplay segment, I think it has a lot of the things that folks are looking for. It's fast. It looked like it respected the types of, I haven't seen all of it, but like hero types or classes. It looks like there's a unique mix both of humanoid creatures and cool silhouettes and things that do all the stuff that make people instantly recognizable in a fast-paced game. It looked like it had a fun mix of powers. It looked bright, which I love. Something I love about Apex is that Apex is also very bright, especially when it came out. We didn't have a lot of those. It was like TF2. And we had some Overwatch stuff, and then Apex continued that trend. And I like that Conquered is doing that as well. And then I'm very curious to see what interested me the most, because I am never going to be that competitive in a person versus person, even a 5-6 person, whatever it is. I'm never going to be that good at it. I'm very curious what these story drops are going to be, Jeff, because they mentioned like what weekly new cutscenes in some form or fashion. I'm very curious what that is. And that has me excited because I loved the Overwatch hero vignettes. And we got those infrequently, but they were awesome, just awesome. And so if this is a game that's going to deliver that on a weekly basis, I'll probably show up and get stomped just to get my story, you know?
Come for the stomping, stay for the story. That's kind of the vibe I got from it.
Well, yeah. I think, you know, Sarah, I'm curious as somebody that works on Apex Legends and, you know, that has such a rich tapestry of heroes and lore as well and tied into Titanfall and that, you know, that universe. Are you able to share with us any challenges that might be there for mixing a game of this type, which is sort of very self-contained and competitive and not much room to work in story with a larger universe that is there to convey that context? Do those things come at odds in the game that you work on?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Like, it comes at odds from like the development perspective, because it's like, how much do we lean into and respect the Titanfall lore? Because, you know, there is a lot to draw on from there. And yeah, how much do we build out and kind of flesh out that universe on its own? And so
both, please. Both. Yes. The answer is yes.
Or maybe
yes,
make another Titanfall game. I'm sorry. That just fell out. I'm sorry.
It's kind of like our top thing. We always get Titanfall 3, win. So yeah, we're used to it. But yeah, I think it's like always that fine line you want to strike that balance of, because you don't want to do too much fan service, because then you take away like what potential storytelling opportunities there are for any sequels or whatever. And then you also, you know, want to do something new and kind of build that out. And then from an audience perspective, you're kind of thinking about like the kids that just want to jump in, run and gun, and you know, make people like me feel bad about our shooting capabilities. But then you also have a big contingent of people that love the story and the world. So it's really like, how do you get those storytelling moments in such a fast-paced shooter? And, you know, like Overwatch with the vignettes, like I'm still crying over the Bastion vignette, like, oh, right in the feelings. But vignettes aren't necessarily in the game. So how do you infuse that world and that universe in the midst of the game? And I think in Apex, the team did a really cool job with those like in-game storytelling opportunities with the narrative system. So you can like have those dialogue moments where you flesh out the story a little bit more without taking you out of the action. So I'm really excited to see how the Firewalk team is going to do this, because that's something we think about a lot on the Apex side.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like a really interesting challenge. I have no idea how it's going to work with Concord, but I was kind of reminded, as you said, Christian, about seeing these, you know, episodes. It almost feels akin to what Remedy tried to do with whatchamahoozits, the game that came out and had like TV series.
Quantum Break.
Yeah. I mean, obviously very different kinds of games, but it did feel like, oh, it almost feels like the companion show Concord is offering of this, like, you know, plucky team of intergalactic bounty hunters. I don't know. I think that could be kind of cool if they can maintain the level of quality they showed from that first trailer this week, and make that, you know, this kind of look forward to see the next installment of what they're up to. I think that could be really fun. So I'm curious how this all plays out. It's not the kind of game that I'm tend to be drawn to, and we will get to the hero shooter that I'm excited about because it has Marvel superheroes in it later in the show. But I think Concord really did make a big splash and looked pretty cool. So I'm excited about it. Excited to see more of how that's all going to work, at least.
I actually am kind of curious to see if this is Sony kind of testing the waters for them being able to use a show or a game as a vehicle for a show, because they do have Sony Studios, and
yeah,
seeing the success of the Fallout show. And
right,
I mean, video game adaptations of shows are kind of killing it. It's like such, I mean, look at The Last of Us, you know? So
yeah,
I'm kind of curious to see if maybe Sony, if this goes well, might want to expand that, because I'm never mad at more game shows.
No, I think you bring up a great point, because it feels like about 10 years ago, a bunch of these things were attempted and none of them really worked, like the Quantum Break. And I feel like there's a couple of others that were announced that was going to be a TV show and a game at the same time. I think there was if I recall correctly, there was like an MMO that was going to do it. I'm not going to be able to remember any specific names, but none of them really panned out. But it felt like it was just, we hadn't gotten there yet with video game TV shows. And you're so right, Sara, that we have now, right? And I think the audience is primed for that. You know, we've seen great versions of video games. And I think the marriage of those two things could really work. And I don't know if this is that, but I do think it, as you say, it might be a toe in the water. I think that's a really cool idea. And somebody's going to pull that off, because I can imagine, you know, when I was 8 and I was rushing home to watch G.I. Joe, if there had been a G.I. Joe video game I could have played and then watched that show and it tied in and connected, that would have been all so fantastic. And I just think that we're at that point now where it might be possible.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I actually think like the general audience that aren't gamers kind of are ready to see games as a vehicle for real storytelling. Because like those of us that have been playing games for years, like we know that there's just some incredibly immersive stories. So yeah. I'm excited. I want to see more of this because, you know, we have, you know, hours and hours and hours of great stories to pull from and really expand those universes.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, next up in the showcase was God of War Ragnarok on PC. We know that Sony's been doing a lot of their big tentpole games on PC. And boy, this looks pretty. It's got DLSS 3.7, which I didn't even know we were up to 0.7. But here we go. It looks I'm sure it's going to be spectacular on PC the way that Ghost of Tsushima was just, you know, recently, and the way all of these releases have shined on PC as well. God of War Ragnarok, a great game, one of our favorite games of that year. I'm excited about it, and it'll include the Valhalla DLC, which is pretty cool too. Then we got a throwback to a game we haven't seen in quite a while. It's been 7 years since there's been a Dynasty Warriors. This new Dynasty Warriors Origins is coming in 2025. I was never a huge Dynasty Warriors fan. It feels like an old kind of game. You know, this one person mowing down thousands and thousands of troops. Sara, do you have any affinity for Dynasty Warriors?
I don't actually. I don't know. I think the shooter genre, like the sim genre, kind of always spoke to me more. But I know fans of those audiences, like, or those games love it. So I think it'll have a really good reception with those crowds.
Christian, Dynasty Warriors, you think it's time to bring that game back, or has its era passed?
I'm curious if it brings something new. I think those games are really fun. I was going to say dumb fun, but that makes it sound more negative than I want it to. Mindless fun, oftentimes. And I think it feels cool to wade into an army of people as just one person and lay waste to them. Like, that oftentimes feels really good. I think the last one I spent any significant time with was Hyrule Warriors, the Zelda skinned version of it.
Right.
And that was super fun on Switch in handheld mode, you know, pick up and play and just mow through people, and it had some narrative connections to, you know, to what the story Nintendo's telling right now with Link and Zelda. So that was fun. I'm curious if this is going to harness the power of current gen consoles in a way. You know, I think something those games have always kind of been known for are these massive armies that you're fighting against. And are we going to see changes to that where it's, you know, 10x larger than it has been, or utilizing the no load screens between battles? Probably PS2. When did these first start? PS1. Last time I put any significant time into it before Hyrule Warriors, I remember there being like those momentum killer disc based loads. I'm sure they've solved that in the interim, you know, 20 years or whatever it's been. But I think there's room for this style of game still. I think it can be a lot of fun. And if the combat is tight, I think a lot of people are still looking for that, as games like God of War have moved away from the bombastic action, kind of keep a chain going kind of attack progression. I think something like Dynasty Warriors, if done well, can fill that hole for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I guess it'll, you know, remains to be seen. Nothing I saw in that trailer wowed me personally, but you know, I think it's certainly a throwback to an old type of game, older type of game. And maybe it'll be a blast. You know, maybe it'll find an audience again. Anyway, Dynasty Warriors Origins, is what it's called. It'll be out in 2025, they say. Then we have Sara's other game that she picked out. Infinity Nikki came up next. This really does look like something fresh and interesting to me. I mean, maybe not the target audience, but it really does seem to be a mishmash of a lot of interesting play types, game types, in one thing. And I think with a pretty sheen, you know, visually it looked pretty impressive as well. Infinity Nikki. Christian, any thoughts on this one?
It stole the show from my kids' perspective. And I think every new thing that you did was something that they found intriguing. It's like, oh, it's like Pokemon Snap. But also you're battling all, and then like I think it was at the end of the trailer the boss came out or whatever. I'm assuming a boss. And they were like, whoa, that thing is huge. And then my youngest goes, got to make sure she's got the right outfit. And I was like, oh yeah, they clearly know, you know, all the pieces are in this game. Like it's all working. But yeah. I love seeing something that is this feels to me, Jeff, kind of like we talked about a lot of indie games recently. I've been taking pieces of other games and making them into this new game.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Infinity Nikki is kind of bringing to the table from some developers that have some pretty killer pedigree. So I think there's a lot to be excited about in it if it comes together right.
Yeah. I thought it looked really interesting. As I said, not, you know, I don't think it's a game necessarily made for me, and that's fine. But I'm intrigued by it, and I like how different it appears. We got another game that I was not aware of before this called Ballad of Antara, which looks like a Souls-like. You know, there's a lot of Souls-likes being made these days. This one, again, visually pretty striking. I thought the image of the person with the child on their back in the fights, just terrible parenting or whatever, you know, maybe just a brother. I don't know if it's a brother-sister situation or a parent or whatever it is, a guardianship that is questionable. Let's just put it that way. Sorry, what did you think of Ballad of Antara?
I actually thought it was interesting. I kind of like that, you know, we're bringing back these big RPGs. I think it's going to be a fun one. You know, I kind of think it's more of a hands-on parenting style to bring your kid to battle, you know, sure. Just
yeah.
Bring your kid to work day.
Bring your kid to slice the demon day. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. I mean, it looked really cool. The kid like hanging on for dear life on the back, piggyback. That's one heck of a piggyback. I'll tell you that.
That kid's grip strength off the charts.
That's right. That's not helicopter parenting. That's, yeah, I, you know, again, I'm not a Souls like huge fan, but this looked cool and interesting. Christian, any thoughts on Ballad of Antara?
I'm guessing that there is something to this guardian kid relationship and like with their powers combined, one needs the other, one is leading the other. I fully expect to cry at some point in this when they are separated for whatever reason, or one is killed and the little one becomes this rages, you know, hulks out in some way. Like this game has like Souls like also get your tissues. Like there's definitely something there, which I think is exciting because I know someone will yell at me and they'll be like, I was moved by Bloodborne story. I love Bloodborne. I was not moved by Bloodborne story. I was moved out of the way of all of Bloodborne's enemies as they killed me. But like, again, I'm speculating because we've seen just a little bit, but I think if this can combine my, I guess, word of the show so far for me, Souls-like combat and a cool emotional story about a brother bond or a parent child bond or something like that, like a Souls-like meets a Tale of Two Brothers or whatever, you know,
Yeah.
You know, all the feels.
Well, also, it looked like there were a number of playable characters that weren't this duo. It looked like there was other characters you're playing as. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how that all comes together as well. But very impressive visually. And I thought, you know, looks like it's going to be one for the Souls-likes fans. We were told before this state of play began, in the days running up to it, that it was going to be a feature upcoming PlayStation 5 and PSVR 2 games. I got very excited because, you know, it seems like the PSVR 2 is being a little underserved. I think anybody would say that. And so I was excited to see some new PSVR 2 games. Well, the PSVR 2 section of the State of Play, I have to say, pretty brief. Pretty brief. There's only two games. They happened now in the lineup. Both of them look cool, but man, two games does not a lineup make. And it seems to me that both of these games will be out on other platforms, potentially other VR platforms. Certainly,
that was your own fault. Alien. That was your own fault for misreading the press release. It wasn't PSVR 2 games. It was two PSVR 2 games. You know, it's PSVR 2 games.
I always get it's that. Like, I did think it was weird that they put the two ahead of the PSVR. But
yeah, I just thought that was a
typo.
I agree with you that I was a little bummed that that's all it was, especially because I know what we're going to get to at the end of this list. Yeah, so I'm bummed.
A rant from me, Christian. That's what we're going to get to.
Oh, sorry. We can just tune out for a little bit, and then I'll like hand sign when Jeff's done, and we can come back in when Jeff starts his rant. I think both of these games look awesome, though. I think Behemoth, which had been announced before with just cinematic stuff, I think the gameplay that they showcased, you have like a thwip, you know, like a thwip grapple spear hooky thing that like kills and brings stuff to you.
That's the technical term.
Big ass monsters stomping on you. Like,
yeah, it does look awesome. This is Skydance's new game. Yeah, it looks really cool. I'm very excited for Behemoth. I would be excited for Alien Rogue Incursion, except it looks too scary.
I am stoked. I am fully expecting to like scream because of the game, and then my loved one's going to walk into my room, and then I'm going to scream again because I'll have my headset on and I won't know they're in the, you know, they'll tap me and be like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "Ah!" You know, like double on double. It looks great, though. From like the brief snippet they showed, I can't wait to see more.
I'm with Jeff. Like, scary VR games, I just can't. Like, I get jump scared in real life by everything. So jump scares in VR and in real life, oof.
Yeah, I heard Servios, one of my favorite VR video game makers. They did Raw Data and Sprint Vector, and the great one of the early top tier developers on VR. I heard them that they were going to be doing an Alien game. I was like, oh yeah, I hope it's like Aliens plural style where I'm just mowing them down, I'm going through you. Nope, it's scary singular alien, terrifying. And I'm like, well, I guess I can't play that one.
Which the difference is, in Aliens, the humans are mowing down the aliens. And in Alien, the aliens are mowing down the humans. And yeah, it's that version. It's the version right where we're getting mowed down, I think.
Subtle distinction there.
Yeah. Subtle distinction. So I think we all agree that both of these games looked pretty cool. But, man, what a brief section for PSVR 2. Neither of which is a first-party Sony game. It doesn't feel like Sony is supporting this piece of hardware with their own studios in any significant way, or at least they didn't show anything today or this week. And I think that's a bummer. It feels like PSVR 2 is already sort of languishing.
Add it to their subscription. They started putting PSVR 2 games in Essentials, Premium Plus, Top Tier, whatever that one's called.
Do it.
So that was like a press release.
It's hard,
and they cut the price, which is a press release.
I really enjoy the PSVR 2. Do I think it's the headset to buy? No, I don't. I think it's the Quest 3 is the headset to buy if you want to get into VR. It's just better on every level. It has more support. It doesn't have the cord. You know, it's hard. It's hard to me to vouch for this thing if Sony isn't even going to kind of support it, and it bums me out. Although these two games I think look really good, and I will be playing them. Will I be playing them on PSVR 2? I don't know. Maybe I'll be playing them on Quest 3. I don't know. And that's a bummer. Then we got an extended look at Rivals, Marvel Rivals, another hero shooter, this one with the Marvel characters. We got announcements of Venom and Adam Warlock and a PS5 exclusive Spider-Man skin. Sarah, I saw you squee. Was that a squee?
I squee. I'm a big Marvel fan person. Like, I grew up reading the comics, collecting all the cards. So you say Marvel, I am in. So I am in for this.
Yeah. I mean, and third person, which is a little different than a lot of the, you know, hero shooters out there. I think that kind of shows off the Marvel characters in a way that I'm excited about. Do you have any, you're somebody that works on this type of game. Do you have any reservations about, we don't know exactly how it's going to be monetized. We don't know, there's a number of question marks about this. Is there anything that you are worried about or hoping for?
I think, like, to your point, like, monetization in hero shooters is always a tricky thing. I think everyone's always trying to strike that balance of, like, making sure you can get as many heroes while also being able to continue live service. So I'm really, like, nervous to see, like, you know, maybe some of your favorites, like the Scarlet Witch or whatever, might be pay-gated.
Right.
But, you know, I'm also excited to see what they do with the abilities and, like, you know, the synergies between all the heroes, because that's always, like, my favorite part. Like, whenever I watch the movies, I was like, oh my gosh, Fuchly combine them, because, man, X-Men 97, seeing those new combos where, like, they're throwing Wolverine and stuff, I was like, yes, finally. Yeah. I always wanted that, so I'm looking forward to seeing how they kind of play with all of the character abilities.
Yeah, that does look like the coolest addition to the formula here for Rivals is those team-up moments. And there were several of them on display in the trailer that they showed during this State of Play. And yeah, it's pretty cool. The idea that, we don't know yet how those are triggered, if you and your teammate both have to do something at the same time, or how that's all going to work mechanically. And I think that's a big question mark. Like, am I able to force you into that as my teammate, or we both have to do something, or is there something in the map that makes it happen, or how that exactly works? But it does look really cool. Christian, Venom, I get. Adam Warlock feels a little deep cutter. You know, I mean, he's in Guardians of the Galaxy movies, so I guess people know him now, but more of a deep cut than Venom. And obviously we're getting some deep cuts because it looks like the main antagonist here is Galactus's daughter, which is a super deep cut. So what do you think of Rivals, or what they showed off?
I think that was intentional of showing, you know, starting with Venom, and that render of Venom, that key art for Venom was just awesome. I think we talked about this around Spider-Man 2, Insomniac's Spider-Man. They also knocked it out of the park. But I think 3D renders of Venom over the years have proven difficult, whether in video game or in movie. On Todd McFarlane drawing all day, every day, looks incredible. It can be whatever it wants. And then for some reason, like, realizing that suit and the movement and the tendrils can be awkward. And I think they nailed the look of Venom in this game. And then I think showing Adam Warlock was to show, like, hey, we get it. This isn't just the Marvel character t-shirts you get at Target. You know, like, this is going to have a deep roster. Also, maybe Adam Warlock will be free in Venom. You'll pay for. I don't know. I don't know how it monetizes, but I'm really curious to see how it plays and how these characters are kind of culled into their hero status. Because sometimes I was talking about silhouettes for Concord, and Marvel characters don't always match their silhouettes. Storm is an Omega threat. Yeah. Phoenix, nothing more powerful. Hulk, powerful, but, like, you don't see Phoenix if you don't know her and think, oh, that's a tank. I don't know if she'll be a tank in this game. But that's what I'm very curious to see. Like, is Phoenix a Mercy-like? Or how do they kind of create these characters within these worlds and their powers? And then how are these powers limited or gated also? Because you always want to be doing the cool thing, right? That's what Marvel Ultimate Alliance and some of these older games solved, is that some of the old, like, Genesis games, I think it was, like, you used Cyclops' blast. I think it was X-Men 1 on Genesis, and that, like, hurt you a little bit. You know, it did the using your power, and it's like, no, that's not how these games work. I want to do all the things all the time. So I'm curious how Rivals does that, because I don't think it'd be satisfying to start with just a pea shooter, you know, and kind of have that power progression. I'm curious,
right?
But I guess some folks have been playing it, so maybe some of those answers are out there already.
Yeah, and I think they say that the beta starts in July, so it will be I think it's imminent in getting our hands on it, and I'm excited. I think it looks really cool.
I actually kind of think that they did a little bit of, like, hey, Marvel nerds, we see you. We know you've been getting all the big marquee characters. We're bringing some deep cuts. Like, we're going to take care of this. We're going to take care of the stories. And I'm honestly just ready to have a Cypher playable character. Like,
yeah,
let the linguist nerds have their moment in the sun.
Love it. I love it. All right. Well, we got lots more coming from Sony's State of Play and more show. We're going to take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace! Oh, we love Squarespace. You know what? There would be no DLCpod.com without Squarespace, right, Christian?
This is true. You can go to it right now, DLCpod.com. Great little description about the show, links to everything, the Patreon, the Discord. You can get merch, our social media, everything right there. Episodes themselves to listen to and play right there on the website. You can comment directly to us, message us. It goes right to our email inbox. And would you believe all made in Squarespace?
Well, I would, because I know us and I know we have no idea how to accomplish any of that stuff you just said.
I mean, I will be honest right here and say that's correct. But if anyone else asks, I'll be like, no, I totally know how to do it. And then I tell them squarespace.com.
I don't know HTML. You certainly don't know HTML.
That was my father's name.
The only reason we accomplished a website at all is because Squarespace is the place. Squarespace gives you the tools that you need. It does off the work for you. It's an incredible thing, Squarespace. If you have any need for a website, for your business, for anything that you're creating, Squarespace is an all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs, anybody, to stand out, to succeed online. Whether you're just starting out, like us, been doing it 10 years, or if you're managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. They've got such awesome features. For example, the Squarespace Blueprint AI and SEO tools. You can start a completely personalized website with their new guided design system called Squarespace Blueprint. You choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand and your business, and optimized for every device. It'll work on anything. You can easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people and grow the way you want. Plus, if you take payments for anything, if you need to sell anything on your website, they make it easy and seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. You can accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Plus, Squarespace is integrated with AI. You can kickstart or update written content on any website, product description, or email with Squarespace AI, generating instant personalized results that know and show your brand identity. Explain what your site is about, choose your tone, and enter what you need to get short or long form text. No matter the placement, Squarespace AI makes it easier to go live, stand out, and succeed online. So why not check it out? Head over to squarespace.com/DLC to save yourself 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Use the code DLC. Get yourself, you could actually build your entire website, use all their tools for free. You don't even have to give them a credit card. But then when you're ready to launch, use our promo code DLC. It'll save you 10% off. You'll want to use their tools too. It's so simple. Squarespace.com/DLC to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. It's also where we bought DLCpod.com because that's the best place to buy domains. Squarespace.com/DLC and DLC at checkout for 10% off. All right. So after Marvel's Rivals, another new game, a really striking visual style, an open world martial arts adventure game called Where Winds Meet. This looked very stylized, kind of dark. Sarah, did you have any reaction to Where Winds Meet?
I didn't, because I didn't get enough of a sense to kind of really dig in and feel it. I'm curious. Like, I kind of love the overall vibe of it being like a martial arts adventure, because there's a part of me that always wishes I could just go off and like train and become super skilled in martial arts. So it like definitely taps into that part of me. But I think I need to see more before I can really kind of dig in. How about y'all?
Yeah, I kind of feel that as well. I wasn't sure what to make of this, quite frankly. Christian, maybe you had a better sense of it than we did.
No, I do expect some heartbreak again. I don't think this is going to be a happy tale, is my guess. So
you think the wins after they meet are going to leave each other?
Or they meet because of terrible forces that bring them together. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I guess I'm a sucker for it because it feels weird to be like, and I'm excited for that, you know, for the second time in this episode. Like, yay, emotion, pull up my heartstrings. I guess I'm excited for that. I can tell you, though, that if you want to become a martial arts expert, all you need to do is listen to an ASMR podcast about it on a cross-country flight. And when you land, you'll know kung fu.
It's always good when Christian references something that we talked about before we started recording. That's always
hey, nice. This show is for me too. Yeah, the show is. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. It's I'm letting the DLC nerds know that I see you.
What I thought very cool that this you know, very much seems to be influenced by Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Like, there's a direct Crouching Tiger reference when they're fighting along the treetops, you know. So it really, I think it has cinematic ambitions as to, you know, what it's trying to convey. And visually, it looked really impressive. I mean, there's scenes in the sort of this snowy white desolate area that looked really impressive. I don't know. Like Sarah, I don't know quite what to make of this yet, but it certainly looked interesting and one to follow for sure. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I love Sony for doing these big, beautiful cinematic adventures. Like, I think that's just kind of how they define themselves. That was their bread and butter for a long time. So I'm excited to see what they do with this game because, fingers crossed, it does meet that Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon vibe because that movie shook it up.
High bar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think we got a release window for this. I could be wrong, but it does look like a game that I would be very interested in. It'll be interesting to see if it comes this year or if it's later than that. Until Dawn is getting an upgrade, visual upgrade for PS5 and PC this fall, a horror game that's been you know, around for years. Thought that looked scary.
Now it has an Academy Award winner in it, though. Before, it just had a cool up-and-coming actor from your favorite TV show. Now it's got Academy Award winner Rami Malek in it.
That's true.
At least I think I didn't do the deep enough dive to see if they were, you know, just copying his voice. I think it's still him. I think it's still his character and his face.
Yeah, I think I spotted him in the trailer. I think one of the games that I would pluck out. We always used to do this during E3. Is, you know, if you could go home with any one game from the conference right now, you could just have it immediately. What would it be? I think a big contender for me from this state of play would be the next game, Path of Exile 2, which, you know, perhaps seems a bit odd to lump into a Sony state of play, seeing as how it's going to be available on, you know, virtually everything. And I have most closely associate Path of Exile to being a PC game, and it's probably on PC where I'll be playing Path of Exile 2. That said, holy smokes, does it look good. It's been in development for so long. This team, you know, Path of Exile 1 is a labor of love with that team. It really, they worked on it for decades and really aligned with the community, that their audience, and continually improving on that game and honing it and really making it something special. And I think Path of Exile 2 just looks so good already. I'm so excited to get my hands on this game, and it sounds like it's going to happen pretty soon. They also announced there'll be couch co-op for the consoles. Sarah, sounds like you're excited about that.
Oh yes, absolutely. Like, from my time working on the Diablo team, I just always love the Path team. They are awesome. They've always been like just such a supportive community, and we love couch co-op for ARPGs. Like, what's not to love? Like, slaying hordes of demons, looting, like, with your partner or your friends. Come on. I'm all about it.
I agree. It's the best way to play. I haven't really talked about it on the show. I will at some point. But my son and I have been playing Minecraft Dungeons couch co-op with each other.
I really thought you were going to say Diablo, and I was like, well, that's a choice, but good. No, I mean, it's a good game, but I think it's a little young.
Several years away from Diablo being appropriate.
Anyway, he's a necromancer, and I've explained the backstory to him.
He likes the part where the blood erupts from the faces of everyone. No, we've been playing Minecraft Dungeons, and which is basically Diablo light, you know. Playing at couch co-op, basically, although no couch is involved. We're playing it in my office in two folding chairs, basically. But it's a blast, and it is the way to play it. And also, Path of Exile 2 evidently is not just going to have couch co-op, cross-play, cross-progression, all the things you want, so that I can be playing it on my PC and then, you know, play it on another system as well if that opportunity arises. I'm so excited for this one. It looks so good.
Yeah, me too.
I love this at a PlayStation presentation just because it highlights again the shift of ARPGs taking consoles seriously, which they hadn't for a while. And we eventually got excellent Diablo 3. Diablo 3 on Switch, I think, was incredible. And kind of Diablo 4 obviously launched on consoles as well. But for a time, it was like, when are we going to get controller support? And I think seeing Path of Exile 2, not leading, it's been announced before, but showing off kind of the console-centric side of it, I much prefer, maybe again, it's when I started getting hurt on slip and slides, I much prefer the carpal tunnel of an ARPG on a controller than the clickety-click-click, clickety-click-click-click-click approach.
Sure.
So
yeah.
I'll probably play it on console, probably PlayStation, to be honest, because I love that controller.
Yeah, I'm here for the ARPGs on console. For the longest time, I was like, why not console? I'm with you, Christian. It just makes sense. It's so much easier because I'm also at the slip and slide age where it's the slip and cry for me. So I really appreciate the controllers for that. So yeah, we could be day one PS5 friends on that.
This slip and slide was dry. Well, it's not now.
Yeah, if you're old enough to play Diablo 4, slip and slides hurt. I think that's
right.
What we
that's
found.
The cutoff. That's the cutoff. You must be this tall to never do this again.
Dad, can I play Diablo 4 with you? Hold on, daughter. Let me set up the slip and slide. Did that hurt? No, that was fun. Then no. You may not.
That's not yet. All right, so the next game is the one I'm most curious to get both of your takes on, because we have been hearing about this Silent Hill 2 remake for quite a while. Huge anticipation. Silent Hill 2, a fan favorite, a classic from the early PlayStation era. We finally get some real footage of the game going. Sara, what do you think of Silent Hill 2 remake?
I think it's going to be awesome. It is going to be too scary for me, so I will sit back and watch everybody else get those jump scares. But I love seeing all the remakes. I love seeing the way that, you know, we're getting to relive all these games all over again. So I'm here for it, just not for me.
Christian, I got to say, pretty underwhelmed myself by the Silent Hill 2 remake footage, especially with all the buildup and anticipation that has been happening over the years of it coming to fruition. But I'm curious. I feel like you're a bigger Silent Hill fan than I, although I played those games back in the day. What do you think of it?
Well, I will lead with what my youngest said as she was watching this presentation with me.
I'm gonna go play slip and slide.
Well, I always say at the beginning of these, because there aren't family friendly ones. It's always like family friendly game, murder. And I'm like, so I say at the start, hey, there's gonna be some games that might seem a little scary. They're all video games. Close your eyes, turn away. You're welcome to watch. So this one started and it's like halfway through. She just looks at me and she goes, why doesn't that guy just leave that city? And I was like,
Very good question.
Good question. I am going to come across like a snob here, and I apologize for that, listeners. The Capcom remakes have been so good. So good. Beautiful. That RE engine, incredible. The modernization, the updates that they bring to the games, whether you liked, you know, the changes to the Stalker or Mr. X or whatever, that those might be hit or miss for folks, but like the quality and the passion poured into those RE2, RE3, and then RE4 now are just so good. that I think had I seen this Silent Hill 2 remake before those, I'd be like, giddy up. Let's go. This is awesome. Silent Hill 2 was such a quirky game. It's so weird in a very grotesque way. I think I would have been stoked to see it. But now I feel like I've been ruined by these Capcom takes. And I don't know if this is going to live up to that standard for me. As weird and unique as Silent Hill 2 is, I don't know if that'll carry it.
I think that's well said. I don't know. This doesn't feel like, I feel like the things that made Silent Hill 2 so memorable are kind of inherent in the limitations they had at the time. And it feels like now to impose those limitations, like fog, you know, like rampant fog, it just feels like, well, they put fog in the game because they couldn't render that far, you know? And I don't know. I can't bring myself to be super excited about this, but I'm like, Sarah, I'm not super into horror games anyway. So I hope this is the game everybody wants it to be and revitalizes Silent Hill in some way. But I don't know. I'm not excited, I'd be honest. The game I am excited about next, or at least I didn't think I was going to be, and then I saw the footage and was like, wow. Monster Hunter Wilds. The first time we saw actual gameplay of the highly anticipated next Monster Hunter game. And boy, visually it looks like a massive upgrade. The monsters look wild and woolly. There's one with a tongue and saliva that just looked so crazy and fun. And you've got little pets. I just, you know, Monster Hunter is a game that I have had a weird relationship with where, you know, I sort of liked it and other versions I didn't really. It's never been my favorite franchise. I know that all of our mutual friend, Lana Bashinsky, I can imagine her just jumping up and down in her seat when she saw this because she's a huge Monster Hunter fan. What did you think, Sarah, of Monster Hunter Wilds?
I'm just like you, Jeff. Like, there are so many mutual friends like our beloved Lana who loves it, and it's not for me, but I think it does look amazing. I love that they're refreshing all the weapons. Like, we love to see those types of things. But yeah, I'm excited for Lana.
yeah, me too. We're all that. That Christian, you, I think, discovered a love for Monster Hunter last time with World. Wilds looks like a pretty impressive visual upgrade, if nothing else. Yeah?
Definitely. And I'm very curious to see how they handle the upgrade. It's not loot. It's loot. The getting better armor, getting better gear, going off on different hunts, and to what extent Capcom has perhaps maybe streamlined that and made it more accessible or done what they've kind of been doing with other games of theirs, Dragon's Dogma, and just said, this is how it is. This is what we do, and it is kind of weird, and get into it or not. And I'm curious if Monster Hunter Wild is going to be as dense for new players as others are. I mean, Lana was my guide. She brought me, I had played a whole bunch, but she brought me in. She straight up bought it for me. I think I was on one of these shows, I said, that's great, but I don't see myself rushing out and buying it. And I think like the day the episode went up, Jeff, I had like, you got a gift in your Steam library. And it's like, oh, Lana, what did you do?
So you're saying it worked.
It worked big time. Yeah. So Lana, I will not be buying Monster Hunter Wild.
Can't wait to see it in your Steam library.
Yeah. I need a coupon exactly. For 10 hours of your friendship to go with it as well. But that game was intimidating. And for me personally, and like, oh, this loadout is this, and trying all these different weapons to see what best suits your play style.
It's but a lifestyle, that game. It's not
for
it's
a
not
lot
for
of people.
Of
yeah. That's what they want. So I do feel like the franchise is a little trapped. I didn't get the impression that Monster Hunter Wilds is going to be its Final Fantasy 16, you know, in terms of like, we're going to make the game for the masses approach, but I'm curious if they do round any edges or not, but visually just stunning, absolutely stunning.
Yeah, looked really slick. And by slick, I mean covered in saliva. okay, then the final game, the last game, the mic drop game.
All right, Sarah, this is when we can just step away for what, 10 game, minutes, Jeff? How long do you need?
They're going to end the conference with – it came up, Christian, you can tell folks what happened. We were watching it in real time, and I texted you with a lot of exclamation points because I thought to myself, I said to myself, I said, self, here's that PSVR 2 game that was going to make the whole thing feel like a PSVR 2 celebration. High five. The mascot of PSVR 2, the one character more associated with PSVR than any other, it's our friend the Astrobot. Because Astrobot, you know, it was the first PSVR platform. Just an incredible, incredible, still to this day, one of the best VR games. An incredible platformer, perfect in VR, just utilizing VR in such awesome way. So Astrobot starts up and I'm jumping up and down. I'm so excited. And it's showing awesome levels and cool creative platforming and really fun homages to Sony characters and lore and all the things that Astrobot has become, which is sort of like this, I don't know, inside baseball kind of, I mean, like inside the console. The whole idea of Astrobot is Astrobot could go inside your console, and it's fun. It's a great idea. It's a really novel concept, I think. And it's celebration of the fact that video games have this history, and PlayStation in particular has a history. All the stuff they're showing, just like, yes, yes, more of that. Give it to me. Do it. High five, Sony. Let's bring it on. Where's the PSVR logo? That's the only thing I need to cap this off and make sure I don't leave this state of play unhappy. No PSVR logo. This is a PlayStation 5 game. And it still looks like it has all that charm and fun and innovation and cleverness. And I don't understand. I simply do not understand why they would not make this playable on both, right? Hey, if there's not enough install base and you want this character to transcend, I understand it not being a PSVR 2 exclusive. You need to have the headset to play this character. I think that could have been cool. I think that could have maybe propelled the headset into a more desirable place for some folks. But at least make it playable on both. Give us a Resident Evil 7 situation or Resident Evil 4 remake situation Gran Turismo situation. Where, hey, you can play it either way. For the people that associate our mascot, Astrobot, with VR, because that's the first time that you ever got to experience it, maybe we could bring that forward onto this new VR platform that we need to have a little juice for. But no.
Never have I received a text from Jeff that originally contained so many exclamations that so quickly became so many expletives. It was a very, very quick 180.
In fairness, they still had exclamations after them. Sara, I don't expect you to have the violent reaction I did, but what do you make of this Astrobot game? I think the game itself looks pretty charming, no?
I think it looks super charming, but now you got me thinking, why isn't it on PSVR? I think we need an impassioned social call out, wrangle the troops, get the internet to help make this happen. Because you're right, it should have been on PSVR as well.
It makes me crazy because so few people got to experience the joy of, I don't even remember the name of the, what's the VR one called? Astrobot something.
Is that
Rescue
Mission or is that the PS5 demo?
No, Rescue Mission is the VR one, right?
Yeah. It's a VR one.
Yeah. The PS5, I don't even remember what that one's called. Anyway.
It's free. The PS5 one is free for you still if you haven't. It's a demo. It's great.
And that's
it's
the one where it really became, you know, this new thing that they seem to be latching onto, which is Astrobot is a sort of celebration of PlayStation, right? It's the little character that can use nostalgia, and it, you know, sort of a you know, in the same way that you know, Disney can bring in all of its characters or whatever, you understand. I get that. I like it. I like that. It's a cool idea that, hey, we're gonna dress up like Kratos, and we're going to dress up like, you know, all the characters from history, and it's going to be fun. And there's going to be all these, they say there's what, like 150 references to Sony stuff. I love it. That's great. But Astro Boy started, or excuse me, Astro Bot started as a VR game. That's how it started. And you've got this headset. You did another headset. Like, I understand if you want to carry this character forward and you're not in the VR game anymore, but you are in the VR game. And that's the problem, is that I don't think Sony thinks they're in the VR game. I don't understand it. Bums me out.
Yeah. I'm hopeful that there will be an announcement at some point that there is a PSVR 2 mode that comes to it later. I thought maybe there's a chance we'd hear something about the PC dongle or connection for the PSVR 2 headset. We also haven't heard about that. And I totally understand and echo your frustrations, because I do think the PSVR 1 Astrobot game is one of the finest VR experiences. It does all the things we often talk about, where it's not first person, it's not replicating your hands in space, which is cool. Those games are cool, but it was so clever with you being the camera and finding the little astrobots that you were rescuing, and just a great
putting you
great,
underwater sometimes, and yeah, doing things to throwing things at you, and make like it was so fun, and it really elevated the game to have it be in VR. And there's a shot from this Astrobot, which is subtitle free, it's just called Astrobot, because they think of it as a reboot of the franchise, which bums me out too, because it's like, oh, you really are stepping away from the VR aspect. But there's a shot of like a boss fight that's very similar to a boss fight in the first game, and I remember playing that in VR and loving the aspect of VR that is this boss fight. And I'm like, you're gonna call back that moment and do it flat? Come on.
Really, all I want to really say
bums me out
is that I do, for folks who don't feel the same way as Jeff, keep this game on your radar, because I think there is a good chance that this is a game of the year quality caliber game in and of itself. I agree. Yes, disappointed that there's not a PSVR 2 mode or version or exclusive nature to this game. But I still think this game is going to be a triumph, and I don't want people listening to this show to kind of write it off like, oh, it didn't do the thing that it does, so it must be bad. Like, the PS5 demo Astrobot game is exquisite in showing off the features of the haptic controllers on the controller. And this team now, it looks like they were given more time, perhaps a larger budget, to make a full-fledged game, action platformer, character mascot platformer, whatever you want to call it. I think this game looks incredible. And I fully anticipate it being, you know, one of my five favorite games of the year, VR, flat or not.
I agree. And Team Asobi is up to that challenge. So why not? Why not leverage that quality level on the piece of hardware that you're having a hard time selling your inventory of?
I'm calling it now. They're going to have the Game of the Year edition on PSVR.
Hey, if that happens, I will be the first one to eat my words and be thankful. Sara, make that
we're manifesting
your lips to God's ears. You know what I mean? Let's make that happen. But I was very disappointed that no logo came out, especially in the thing where you said we're going to have updates on PSVR 2 games. Ah, Sony, you're killing me. Anyway.
Well, that's this week's show, apparently. We lost Jeff. Yeah, no, He
flew melted. Away. His head exploded and he flew away like a deflating balloon. Sorry, everybody. It does look like a really excellent game, and I'm excited to play it. I think it's going to be one of my favorite things to do.
I love all of my children equally. I cannot pick a favorite.
I'm going to love it, and it's going to be a delight every moment I'm playing it, and I just have a great time. All right, speaking of a great time, let's talk about the games that we have been playing. But first, quick break for another sponsor. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
All right, let's talk about the games we've been playing in a segment we call The Playlist.
Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on The Playlist.
Sara, you have been playing a number of things, including Apex Legends, as one might guess.
Shocking.
What's new? What's going on in Apex Legends these days?
Oh, man. We just released our new season, so tons of exciting stuff. Brand new legend, bringing back solos. The thing that my approach with Apex is I'm on the upper end of the slip and slide audience, so I'd like to think that I'm here to deliver nice loot to everybody. I'm here to boost everybody's self-esteem. Like, that's kind of my MO in the game. So, It's been great. I've been playing Apex since day one. And, this is such a cool industry where if you love a game, you can be fortunate enough to get the opportunity to work on it. So that was me with Heroes of the Storm. That was me with Apex. So, So been loving it. The new legend is awesome. Been loving the new modes. I have over 2,000 hours in Apex. Like, it's, wow. It's kind of like my second full-time job besides being my day job.
That's awesome.
It's been great.
I'm just not the target audience for this either. I'm not a hero shooter guy. I'm not even a shooter guy at this point. But I look at this game from afar. I say I'm not a shooter guy. I love the Titanfall games. I love this universe. I'm just not a competitive multiplayer guy, really. Tell me what I'm missing. You know, I know there's fun to be had there, and you sound like, 2,000 hours. I know that's not just I work on the game. That's a real love. So tell me what I'm missing.
I think what it is I really enjoy like the teamwork aspect, because I am not good enough to carry my team. So when you're able to I think that's the great thing about games, is when you're able to work with a team and your friends and just really kind of raise that skill level. I just love the depth. Like, there's so many different guns. Every gun has its own unique personality. The team does such a great job with the balance. So every season it feels fresh. And then I love the legends and the stories. It's like Heroes of the Storm. There's such a depth with everyone. We have this new legend upgrade system where, it's actually between us friends. It was heavily inspired by the hero's talent system, where you can pick new abilities and talents. So it really added a lot of strategic depth and variability in the gameplay. So I think for me, it's just one of those, you got an hour, you want to jump in, get some reps in, get some kills, I just like that, I'm getting totally stomped on by all the utes out there, but it's educational. And I think the community around it too, I gotta say the Apex community's tops, cause I also work on our esport, and the pro players are very sweet. I'll play with some of them, and they'll take me on a ride and just be like, okay, well, I'll follow the trail of death boxes, but they're having fun and I'm just happy to be along. So yeah, I think those are probably the biggest things. The movement, the guns, the legends, like there's always something new to learn and master. So I like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Love it. That's Apex Legends. I see you're also playing a game that is much more my speed because it's turn-based. Baldur's Gate 3, you know, my game of the year last year, a lot of people's as well. Do you think as highly of it?
I love, love, love it. I'm a D&D geek through and through. So like just playing it, there's so many geek out moments when you see like the unique items, the abilities. I love that you can play with your friends. And then the co-op integration, I think, is one of the best I've seen in recent memory. Like, it's hard to find good couch co-op games. And so I love Baldur's Gate. Endless.
So are you playing it mostly in that way, co-op?
I am. Yeah. It's like our after work game. You know, my partner awesome. And I will sit down, like hang out and just play together. And he's
so cool.
He's newer to D&D. So I kind of love it because it's like onboarding him to D&D. And I'm like, step one, get into Baldur's Gate. Step two, start a campaign. Like there's a longer term plan here. So I love it. Baldur's Gate is such a fantastic game. Like Larian knocked it out of the park.
It's so true. And I never would have guessed that a video game version of 5th edition D&D would work A, so well, and B, would be that kind of thing that reveals to people what is so fun about the tabletop version. It just seems like an impossible task to create a video game version of this rule set that shows off what makes it special. Like that. What makes it special is sort of the interaction of the human beings. And yet Larian found a way to sort of replicate that or give you a simulacrum of that so effectively that it really does serve as a gateway drug to, you know, tabletop D&D, which is amazing.
It really does. And I had so many of those like little geek out moments. Like if you're a fan of a book series that gets turned into a movie, I had so many of those geek out moments with Baldur's Gate. We're like, oh my gosh, that's what it looks like when you cast speak with animals, or that's, you know, like I kind of loved that. So yeah.
So true.
Best game.
So good. Baldur's Gate 3. Also a game on your playlist that I'm very curious about. It's gotten some up and down reviews. Is Cities Skylines 2.
Yes. So I grew up playing SimCity 2000. Love those types of like just vibey, lose track of time, building cities. So Cities Skylines, I put so many hours into the original. So when 2 came out, I was really excited about it. I'll be honest, I don't understand all the hate. I think they streamlined a lot of the systems, makes it a lot easier. I know the traffic AI is always a thing people have feelings about, but overall, I kind of like it to, you know, as a game to change the channel and just kind of put on good music, vibe out, and just build cities. Like, it's kind of nice when I'm done getting stomped in Apex.
And it's a beautiful game, Cities Skylines 2. I mean, the graphic engine makes some really almost photoreal cities, right?
Yeah, it really does. And I think there's a lot of depth to it because, like, you know, you can really build your city to kind of focus on a specific industry or income type, and you know, it's there's a lot of variability, so it's kind of fun because, you know, it's something you can like, oh, check out my city, look at this, and you know, it's kind of like the min-maxing thing too. Like I've been able to min-max several industries and stuff, like super geeky, but I love City Skylines. I'll forever say, like, you know, if you need that like zen mental health type game, City Skylines is it for sure.
That's great. I love it. And then F1 2024, which I think just came out, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Formula One. That is like my other love besides Christian, we have lots to talk about. but yeah, I love Formula One. It's like my second love after video games. And so, you know, I think my toxic trait is thinking that with enough hours in F1 2024 or Gran Turismo, I could also become a professional driver. So...
Soto's hiring. I heard Soto's hiring, so they're gonna need somebody. So you got to get those hours up. You know, got to get those hours up.
I'm gonna get those hours up. I'm gonna get that super license. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, who's driving for Mercedes, right? I mean, there's gonna be an I don't know. It's like it's a small pool of availability, but one of them's opening up. So I figure, like, why not you?
Yeah, Why not?
I feel like you guys could have done this while I was ranting about Astrobot, and then we would have just saved time, because then I, you know, there's no overlap in our Venn diagrams. I love it, though. So is there this one, I'm assuming you feel is a worthy successor, a worthy yearly update to the F1 franchise?
Yeah, I think so. It's like, you know, those sports franchise games where it's not an wholesale overhaul with every release, but there are some good updates. And, you know, I'm a geek, so I have like a little driving sim that I play on. So it feels good. I really enjoy the immersion, the career mode aspect of it. And then, you know, sometimes we'll get some friends over, we'll have a couple drinks, we'll try and see who can do the best time lapse. Like it's kind of fun for those types of things. So yeah, big fan of F1 2024. Awesome.
I was this close to, I picked my DLC hat for obvious reasons, but I was very close to wearing my Mercedes hat today.
Ooh.
But every time I do, Toto gets mad. So I feel like he blames all the losses on me. It's not my fault.
Having a rough season this year so far.
Yeah. Yes, they
are. Yes. Cars.
Cars. So we've talked about this, Jeff, and I think maybe it's been on Filmcast as well. The Netflix
that show, yeah, it's supposed to be awesome. I have not watched it, but I've heard it is excellent. Yeah,
it's really good, and so good now that like I can say Toto and people know who I'm talking about. Whereas probably 5 years ago, it'd be like the Wizard of Oz dog, and now it's like, no, you are a known entity. Like, not only Drive to Survive. I mean, that show is really well done, but it also, I think, really changed the sport in interesting ways where. Like real life drama spilled out because of the show and how people are represented in the show, and teams have been rearranged, and folks who didn't agree to do the show originally because they were like, we're bigger than that, came back later seasons, were like, please let us on the show. This sounds so good. And the sport's expanding a lot, a big push in the US. Monaco's race was incredible. A tiny, tiny, tight track, but just like a feel good story. So I don't know how well that all transitions to the video game, but Jeff, so I'm not talking about you need to play the game, but I think aside from time differences and to watch a lot of races, F1, it's never been easier to get into now from a casual, I'm here for the stories. Like my wife watches the Olympics to hear the vignettes about the people in between.
Right.
And F1 is killing it in that game right now. Killing it.
1,000%. Like, I think the thing that makes it interesting, it's like a soap opera on wheels because you're in a different location every time, but you also have the unique inner team dynamic because every team has two drivers. So each driver is going for their own personal championship. And
which, congratulations, by the way, on getting that car.
Thank you. you know, they're also going for the team. So it's a very interesting game of strategy and push and pull between like individual glory and the team glory. And it creates a ton of friction and a ton of sparks. And it's unlike any other, like I'm not a sport person, but I am an F1 person. And so seeing the way that, you know, to Christian's point, seeing the way that Drive to Survive has changed it has been an incredible journey because now you see American podcasters talking about it, like us, which is like something that would not have happened 5-6 years ago. So it's really cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I used to have to drive to the West Side to go to the auto club to watch races. And now it's like everybody watches races. You can just go to your local pub.
I remember back in the early 2000s when Garnett Lee would talk about F1 and everybody would look at him like he was crazy. And he was the only person I knew that. Now you're right. It's much more United States fan base has grown, which is cool. I got to say, though, just looking at Sarah's playlist is pretty rad because you have Apex Legends, Baldur's Gate 3, City Skylines 2, and F1 2024. That is a gamut. That runs the gamut. That's a spectrum of genres. I love it. That's somebody who loves video games right there. Really cool. Christian Spicer, your playlist starts with a big release this week. We've been talking about it, got pushed back a little bit. You and I both been playing The Rogue Prince of Persia.
I'm sorry, this has become an F1 podcast now, Jeff. I don't know if you know what you did.
Oh, man.
But it has. No, yes, The Rogue Prince of Persia. We put up on Instagram a reel, on YouTube a short, whatever you call it, talking a little bit about it earlier or later last week. It is the latest rogue type game to come out this year, of which I think there's been many, but this is now the third, I would say, marquee. And I don't mean that necessarily by quality. There are certainly some excellent other rogue type games that have come out this year, but Hades 2, No Rest for the Wicked, and The Rogue Prince of Persia are pretty big entries in this in terms of the teams developing them and or the IP they're bringing back to the table. And this is the year of the Prince of Persia. Jeff, I love this game. The Rogue Prince of Persia, I don't love all roguelikes, all rogue types. I really do love the Prince of Persia and have over pretty much every iteration of it as it's evolved. And this game is early access, and it feels it. It feels early access in a way that Hades 2 doesn't necessarily. Hades 2, if you told me that was a 1.0 release, I would believe you. I'd be like, oh, look, they missed one art asset. This game's incredible. The Rogue Prince of Persia just ends. I think it's, what, there's a mini boss, two bosses in an end? I forget. But it just, it's like, yeah. we're making this. And I've had a couple of hard crashes. But this team and the support work they did on Dead Cells and now bringing the Prince of Persia IP to it, I think is just an Oreo cookie type of deliciousness. It's just the perfect amount of everything. The way they've implemented the platforming and the wall running, and to know that these levels are procedurally generated in some form or fashion, you know, moving the tiles around, but it still feels like a compelling platformer. Like I just...
Christian, I just got to jump in here because that just does not account for Oreo big stuff. If you say that the definition of Oreo is the perfect amount of everything, then I exhibit A, Oreo big stuff. That is a different amount of some things.
I can go double stuff, but I'm not going big stuff. Now you've messed up the ratio, my friend. And Sarah and I are going back to F1.
Did I even say the wrong stuff?
So, well, I was confusing like too much it with stuff.
The 1960s Motown hit. Mr. Big Stuff. That's because they did the Oreo, whatever. Anyway.
Whatever.
I shouldn't have interrupted you either way. You're talking about Rogue Prince of Persia, and I made a dumb Oreo joke.
I love it.
It's okay. I will connect Oreos back to F1. Let me just find how to get there. When
I agree with you. I'll just say
dolphining.
I agree with you because the game is excellent. And I think the core of its excellence for me is the traversal.
Yes,
which
that's
is
what I was saying before you interrupted me. But no, go ahead. I won't
continue.
Interrupt you.
I'm sorry. I
just did. No. Go ahead. Go. I'm joking.
I am shocked at how brilliant the solution was to create traversal, like 3D traversal on a 2D plane, is awesome. Obviously, Prince of Persia started as a 2D game, but I think much more well known by, you know, the current generation of gamers as a 3D game, you know, Sands of Time and Onward. And they have somehow created this 2D side-scrolling platformer that brings in these three-dimensional, you know, you've got wall running, you've got the way you move through this world, the way you deal with enemies, flipping over them and around them and doing things that usually are reserved for a third dimensional space, but doing it on this 2D plane and making that feel so fun. The weight of the hits, the how the character moves in this kind of herky jerky way that is so pleasurable, and the way you propel yourself up walls and how they use the environment to limit how you can do that, but it feels like you could do it anytime you want, all the time.
Sometimes you don't have the back wall and you get used to using the back wall to run up or run on it, and it's not there, and how does that change your combat encounter? And then all of the other Dead Cells-esque stuff of weapon unlocks, this, you have the, I forget what they call them, but like the hurt yourself to get an advantage. Yeah. Fountain. And then the medallions, is that what they are? Like the perks, and where you put them levels up the next one. And I love the way the souls, the thing you're collecting, it's not by finishing a run that you bank them. You have to find in a level, you have to find the fountain to deposit the glimmer into. So it's not like, oh, I can just sprint to the end of this level and be safe. It's like, oh, I have 32 of these things.
I better explore this level and that push and pull. And then there's story. I don't, well, there's some story in the early access, but there's hints at story a la Hades and Hades 2.
It does feel very, very inspired by Hades in that regard in the narrative layer of the game. And I think in a very good way, I think that's a great thing to be inspired by. But man, it shows so much promise. I agree with you that it's hard to say, hey, buy this now, because it's less baked than Hades 2. And that's okay. And it is coming out as an early access thing. But my goodness, the promise it shows for what it will be, I think, is impressive. The art style is so visually striking and unique, interesting.
Soundtrack's an all-time banger. The music is beautiful. Beautiful.
It's a real triumph for this team. And I think that I can't wait to see where it goes. I can't wait when they add more, you know, sort of biomes, for lack of a better word. You know, more tile sets, I guess, is the better way to say it. I'm excited to see where it goes, but I think the central core 5 seconds of fun repeated thing is nailed already. Like that is just so good. And I feel like I have so many options how to deal with enemies. And as you said, getting new weapons changes things up so significantly, like your timing changes, what the weapons can do changes the way you work. And you have, you know, a ranged weapon and a melee weapon, and how those interact with each other and how you can switch between them instantly on the fly. I did not expect there to be potentially two Prince of Persia games in my top five this year, but here we are.
I was going to say, if at this point, if they release three more Prince of Persias this year, my top five is going to be
all Prince of Persia.
And or four Prince of Persias and an Astrobot, I think is what my my end of the year is going to be. And I love too how
by
this
the way,
game,
I saw four Princes of Persia and an Astrobot at Coachella, and they were amazing.
They were. So I'm glad they got all the Prince of Persias back together again. that vicious fight they got in.
It was so hard.
In Dead Cells, it has the thing too where there's like a door. You know, again, it's a 2D game, but there's a door that you enter into. And a lot of times that, you know, takes you to a challenge area. And in Dead Cells, they were often a combat challenge area. There'd be a lot of enemies. And at the end, there's a chest. In the Rogue Prince of Persia, those areas are oftentimes awesome platforming moments where you gotta, you know, run on the wall, climb the wall, bounce over here, get on the pole. And there are times where it's like, I don't think I can do, I must unlock a double jump at some point because there's no way I can pull this off. Oh, well, while I'm here, I better try. Ooh, I'm close. Ooh, and you do it and you have that, you know, precision platforming moment. And I love the way they make those as discrete rooms that you go into, because I think it lets them build them as actual individual
puzzles.
Crafted
yeah.
platforming sections. So yeah. Good.
Yeah. And it also kind of harkens back to how that worked in like Sands of Time. Cause you would walk into a room and it would be like, how do you get up there? Well, figure it out, dude. And so it kind of is very reminiscent of the franchise as a whole, which is so cool. They took all the right, I think, inspirations, you know, from other roguelikes, from other sort of Metroidvanias, and from the franchise that they're making. It really does feel like a very, very cool game, but not done yet, right? This is an early access game and it is not done yet. So we will be tuning back into this and seeing how it progresses over its lifespan of early access. All right. What else is on your playlist, Christian?
The other thing I want to mention, well, first I need to give a shout out to Max, who's maybe our youngest.
The one to watch for HBO?
No, not that Max, a different Max. Maybe our youngest listener. I'll tell the story probably on a Wednesday show. But Max, if you are still listening at this point of the show, heck yeah, bro. Welcome. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. The second game I want to talk about also requires a shout out to our friends at Into the Aether. They put out recently an excellent Uncharted bonus episode. They do these bonus episodes where they're like all in on a franchise or all in on a console is usually how they start their seasons. and they just did an Uncharted episode, and I was listening to that when I was walking my dog, and they go through all the games. They're talking about Uncharted 3, and I was like, I have not played Uncharted 3 in a very long time. That's the one, for whatever reason. I'm like, one, I like to see how it started. Two, GOAT. Four, Lost Legacy. Oh, yeah, there was another one. There was three. So after hearing them talk about it on Into the Aether, I went back and played probably two-thirds of Uncharted 3. Two notes for Uncharted 3 that struck me as a replaying
late,
it now.
A little late for notes on this one, but okay.
No. I address them to Mr. and Mrs. Naughty Dog, so I think they're going to get them. One, my goodness, does that game have some of the best set pieces of any Uncharted. Asterix, they're really flimsily held together, which was kind of the critique of the game at the time. But the set pieces by themselves, incredible. Other note, that is just my takeaway as a game. I haven't played that regularly, and I'm playing it on my PS5 via the Nathan Drake collection, the PS4 collection of all of them. I was kind of shocked at how dated the game looked and felt in terms of Uncharted 4 still looks incredible. You know, the PC release on it is incredible. I think you can play the base game. It looks incredible. And what struck me, and this is not a critique about the game itself, but I found it interesting to find myself living in the moment of not current graphics, not nostalgic for these graphics yet, just kind of like, oh, these are old graphics, which I thought was a really interesting place to be in, because at some point, I'm sure these old Uncharted games, Uncharted 3, will be Valheimed, you know, like someone will purposefully go for that approach. But when it came out, it was cutting edge graphics, and it's no longer that, but it's not bad, but it's also just this thing that existed in this time of the world. And I found it fascinating to play a game that was just that thing. And I think analytically, I haven't done that in a while. And it kind of blew me away at like, oh yeah, this is an old game that's not beloved yet for a look, you know, it's just a game.
Yeah. Actually, seeing that you were playing through Uncharted 3, it made me want to ask y'all, how do you decide when to revisit old games? Like, because I think that's something that all of us who play games like to do from time to time. Like, is it like a nostalgia hit? Is it you miss it? Or is it somebody talks about it and you go, you know what? I got to fire that up. Like, how do you decide when to replay games?
That's a great question. I think, Christian, I think you do it more often than I do. I'm always kind of looking forward at what's next, but it sounds like in this case it was that podcast, but is there
in this instance it was Into the Aether for sure during their bonus, and Uncharted franchise is one of my all-time favorites, so it's like easy. It's like, go do that thing you love again. I was like, done. I think it was Aftermath. I think Aftermath had an article. Ooh, I hope I'm not, I mean, it's a positive article. I just don't remember where I read it. I wish I did. But it was talking about how playing an old game can trigger nostalgia in a way that other things don't, because you're also doing the thing. It's like, I can go rewatch Ghostbusters and I can have that, or I can go sit on a Little League field as people are playing and I can have that feeling of nostalgia again or whatever. But seeing the thing and playing,
ask you to leave.
Well, I'm taking pictures because I'm making playing cards for all of the
memories.
Athletes.
I'm experiencing nostalgia. How can you experience it 30 feet away from all these children?
I am sniffing the grass that was freshly clipped because it reminds me of my childhood. I can no longer have fun on a slip and slide. Let me have this. but something about the playing of a game can trigger that nostalgia in a way that is more euphoric than other forms. And I do think sometimes I chase that of a simpler time. And I think for me also how I pick it up, or old games again, is now so many of those games are accessible in a way that they weren't before via an emulator or a Steam Deck with fast forward, rewind, save state pauses, that it really gives me that hit of nostalgia and a warm hug whenever I want, wherever I want. And I love being able to experience those games that way. So now it's like, yes, I am playing God of War 2 again, 5 minutes at a time, and that's all it needs to be, versus pulling up my PS2 again. So I don't know. Sorry, do you dive back in ever? Do you look back?
I do. And I do it like both for the nostalgia hit. Like, you know, sometimes I'll fire up some Quake or Unreal Tournament and just be like, oh, or like Halo 2, because that's forever goated. But Sometimes I miss universes like Mass Effect, where I just miss the world and the people. And it's almost like visiting old friends again. And like, sometimes I play it for that. And I don't know, maybe that's just like me being a, you know, liking people, but just, you know, going back and like revisiting those old friends sometimes. So I think those.
I totally get that. For me, the biggest version of that is World of Warcraft, you know, is like going back and visiting a place that feels like, oh, go back. I went back to my hometown. I haven't been to my hometown in, you know, since I graduated from high school, you know, that's how it feels going back to WoW. Every time an expansion comes out, it's like, oh yeah, this felt so good. And I remember all the good times I had here.
Hey, WoW's on GeForce now, Jeff. So you can have WoW anywhere, whenever you want. Also, I played a lot of Prince of Persia on GeForce Now. Not shocked, because I love it. But if you have checked out of cloud gaming, I'm playing a roguelike platformer via the cloud, and it's excellent. Try it again. Try cloud gaming again if you haven't. But yeah, you can get your Warcraft whenever you want, Jeff. That game would work well with touchscreen controls too.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, it would. That's interesting.
You have it. You have it with you all the time.
All the time. You know what? 10 years ago, that would have been, or not even 10. What? How old is my son? It's 8 years ago. That would have been the greatest thing I could possibly imagine. Now it's less possible for me, but man. Yeah. Anyway, I totally get that. I tend to either revisit games that are really old, like my you know, youth games, or just play new stuff. I tend not to revisit like, oh, that was fun 5 years ago, 4 years ago. But maybe I should do more of that.
It's really nice. And I think that's the cool thing too, is you also get tapped into the communities. Like Heroes of the Storm, I worked on the game, love that game, love that community. So it's always fun to dive back in and see the friends list to be like, oh. So it's a little bit of that nostalgia.
Heroes. Oh, how I miss it.
Same.
Oh, how I miss it. All right. I have one more game on my playlist. It's actually fits right into this conversation in a very odd way. It's a new game.
Uncharted 2. Oh.
I was playing Uncharted 2. No. It's called Astor Blade of the Monolith. Astor Blade of the Monolith. And I saw somebody describe this as, what if they made a new PS2 game and it looked really pretty? And that's kind of accurate, I think. It feels like, I mean, the easy comparison of Astor Blade of the Monolith is an old Zelda game, like Ocarina of Time. It's very much hoping to be, give you a lot of that Zelda, you know, classic 3D Zelda vibe, and it does so. I mean, you're going around, you're going into dungeons, you're a cute kind of dude who has to save the world because he gets a sword, and you know, you're doing puzzles and you're fighting monsters and you're unlocking new weapons and you're getting new abilities to go to new places. So it does have a lot of Zelda vibes, but I think even more than that, it's like Darksiders or Soul Reaver. You know, there were some of those games in like the PS2 era that were really like solid games, but they just never kind of endured as long-standing franchises. And that's kind of what Astor Blade of the Monolith feels like. I will say it does have some modern trappings, and it certainly is prettier. It doesn't look like a PS2 game, right? It's really pretty, almost too colorful. It's a very vibrant world, almost garish in how it's presented, but I think charmingly so. Lots of detail, lots of really different biomes, lots of really cool visual flourishes. And like I said, very colorful, very vibrant. And a much beefier game than you might think. It's an indie game. I got it for $22. It's not, you know, not a full priced game. And it's one of those ones where I kind of don't know what to do with this game. I don't know how to describe it to the audience. You, the audience, because on the one hand, like, it's a $22 game that is solid. It's solid. And like, if it had come out 15 years ago, it would probably be one of the best games you played 15 years ago, you know, whatever it was. But the bar for how good games are now is so high. And there are such, there's such polish with, I mean, if you look at a game like Hades 2, which is not even officially out yet, and it has such polish, this game, I think, is not that polished. But it's also an indie game with a very small team and a very small price tag. So I kind of don't know where to put this. It's like, on the one hand, I go, there's better ways to spend your time if you're, you know, if time is at a premium for you. There's games I would recommend ahead of Aster Blade of the Monolith. But also, there's worse ways to spend your time. It's not a, it, not a bad game by any stretch. It's got a lot of really fun moments. There's combat that is, you know, that is constant, that is perfectly fine. You get cool upgrades. You've got this runic system where you're getting these cool, almost God of War style, you know, extra things you get to do when you buy into the system. There's different weapons that you'll get that change up the way you play. It's got a parry system because it's 2024 and you can't have a combat game without a parry system. But it's definitely not Souls-like. You know, there's no Souls-like elements. Very sort of classical hack and slash fun. You feel OP a lot. It's got some light platforming and some light puzzles. It's got a lot going for it. And I kind of just don't know. I don't even know how to position it relative to the audience. So I'm just kind of laying it out there for you, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pretty solid, fun kind of Zelda, classic Zelda, 3D Zelda-like, you know, before the Breath of the Wilds of the world happened. This is, you know, that Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask style. Not as polished as those games, but also not bad, not broken, not unplayable. Certainly has fun elements to it. So
That's how I describe myself on dating apps, if I were to describe myself on dating apps. Like, not as polished as this guy, but also not bad.
I'm no Link.
Yeah, but playable, you know, like worst. Yeah. This is why I had to get married young, so I didn't have to bother with this. Worst right. ways to spend Smart. Your times, but also not a bad way to spend your time.
Is it a game that you would tee up while you're waiting? Like, if you have your main game and you're waiting for the match to queue or whatever, is that a game that you would recommend teeing up while you're waiting for the main game? Like,
yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's a perfectly pleasant experience, you know, and I don't want to give short shrift to an indie team of like, you know, they did such a great job. They're a plucky indie team and they're really like, you know, swinging for the fence. I don't want to patronize. That's the word I couldn't think of. I don't want to be patronizing to it's an indie game. And I don't want to be like, well, for an indie game, it's great. It's a solid game. It's just, it doesn't have that really supreme level of polish that you get with some games in a similar genre. But I don't think it takes that much away from it, right? I do think I think that might be a great way to describe it, Sarah, is it's a game that can live alongside other games and can give you, you know, it can scratch a certain itch that if you like these kinds of games, there's a lot to like in it. So anyway, that's Astor, Blade of the Monolith. I would love, if you have a few more minutes to stick with us, Sarah, yeah. I'd love to carve out a little bit of tabletop time because you are a tabletop gamer. All right, let's do it. Let's do a little bit of tabletop time.
Right now.
Time. All right, Sarah, you mentioned that you are a D&D player. We don't have to talk about that too much, but I'm curious because it looks like you've also been playing Gloomhaven, which is similar to a D&D type experience without the need for a dungeon master or a game master. A very intense game, very big, bulky, expensive game. Do you think it is worth it? How far have you gotten into the campaign of Gloomhaven?
So we played with a bunch of the family, and it is a bulky, big, huge understatement. Like, to set up and just go through the initial rules was like 3 hours, like no exaggeration. Yeah. And there was several game developers like in this group. So it's not a group that's unfamiliar with games. So it is a big, daunting game. But the thing I kind of really love about it is that it is like D&D without the dice. Like, I love the way that they kind of built these systems to have the same randomness, but with cards. So to your point about it not needing a DM, it is a little bit more on the rails. It is like kind of an encapsulated experience with a lot of variability. So I would say if you are committed, you love rules, and you have the patience or the table space to dedicate to Gloomhaven, it's totally worth it. Because it is a really fun co-op experience to play with friends and family. Because I think a lot of these big types of tabletop games tend to be like competitive. And sometimes like problem solving with a group is always fun. So in some ways, it's kind of like a tabletop escape room in a lot of ways.
Oh, that's a really cool way of describing it. Yeah. It's an escape room if the escape is a dungeon and the room is full of zombies.
Yes.
No, I love it. You know, one of the cool things about Gloomhaven, if people aren't familiar with it, is that as Sara was describing, you have these cards and they're two there's a top and bottom to the card, and each of those it does different things, and you can choose to use either the top or the bottom of the card. And so one of the things that can be daunting about Gloomhaven is the sort of analysis paralysis of how many options you have at any given time. And as you said, it's not just my options. It's that, is it smartest for me to do this if you're going to do that? Or should you do that and then I do this? And so it becomes this sort of collaborative, as you said, you know, puzzle solving. But because there's so many more people and so many more, everybody's hand is an option. Every card in everybody's hand is an option. The level of potential moves just keeps expanding, and you get to a point where it can be kind of unwieldy.
Yeah. And I think with Gloomhaven, it's also like Monopoly in the sense that I think everybody has their own house rules, because there's different modifiers and things you can do to make the enemies extra strong, to kind of like play on team center or your team synergies and stuff. So it is good, but very daunting. Like, I mean, if you're like me, where someone starts describing instructions and your, you know, consciousness leaves you like Homer Simpson style, like probably should have a rule nerd at the ready, but it is a really fun experience once you get into it.
Fair enough. I'm usually the rule nerd who like comes out and says, did somebody call? I see that you've also been playing Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
Yes. Have y'all played that?
I have, yeah.
I really enjoy it. So basically the premise is you're a contractor and you're building a castle for a mad king. And every room has different benefits, different costs. And it's kind of like you play against everybody else and you're trying to build the greatest, most grand castle with the maximum amount of points. It's really fun. There's a lot of like strategy to it, and you can kind of set your teammates up for failure depending on how you build your castle. So it can get like, it seems simple at first, but it can get kind of cutthroat depending on who you play with. How's your experience been with it?
Oh, I've only played this game maybe twice, and I enjoyed it both times. It's super, super wacky and fun, but like that's to be expected based on the title. Like, it's not the level-headed King Ludwig. It is you're sort of almost playing a game of Tetris with the tiles and kind of trying to get things to fit and work together. And I really enjoy the game. I think there's an update that happened to this game fairly recently that added like better materials to it too. I could be wrong about that.
Oh, that's the case, Mark.
Yeah. Really, really fun, cool game. Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
Yeah. It's a great party game. You know, it's one you can talk and kind of still be in the moment instead of like Gloomhaven where you're focused.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. All right. I have one quick tabletop game that I wanted to bring up. Friend of the show, Danish Syed, texted me that this thing existed, and I did not realize it. There is a game that I played many times years ago, never owned, called Loop and Louie. that is a really fun dexterity game with a little guy in an airplane on this sort of crane arm flying around, and you have to try to bop him around and get your friends and not get yourself. So fun, this game, Loop and Louie, but it's kind of was, I think it's out of print, or I don't know. I played it at a friend's house, and evidently they have released a new version of Loop and Louie, but they have used an IP that I absolutely adore, Bluey. They did not call it Loop and Bluey, which they should have, but Bluey, the beloved dog kids show. Everybody knows Bluey now. There was a time when you'd bring up Bluey and nobody would know what you're talking about. Everybody knows Bluey now. It's taken over the world. Bluey has a Loop and Louie game, and it's not. It's called Bluey Keepy Uppy, the game. If you know the Keepy Uppy episode from season one of Bluey, they're trying to keep a red balloon in the air. So instead of a little guy named Louie in an airplane, it's a red balloon on a crane arm. And it sort of sits in the center of a three-pronged stand. And each player, there can be up to three players, sits at the end of that prong. And they have a series of tokens that are sort of precariously set in this little groove. And if the balloon on the arm hits your tokens, it'll knock your token off. And you only have three tokens. And if all three of your tokens get knocked off, you're out of the game. And it's the last person standing. But the way you play it is you have a little lever that you tap down, and it can bop the balloon into the air. So this balloon on a crane arm is kind of rotating around. It's a mechanized game. You put batteries into it, and it's rotating around and also teetering back and forth on this pivot point in the center. And so you can push your little, like your little teeter-totter lever and hit as the balloon comes down and hit it, knock it into the air, and it flies up. And you're trying to hit it such a way to land just at the right point to knock your opponent's coins off, their little tokens off. But they are trying to time it. It's almost like pinball, where you're using paddles to try to get the ball to – you knock the ball at the exact right moment to give it go to the right spot. It's that, except it's this rotating balloon on an arm. I'm probably doing a terrible job of explaining it, but very fun. And my kids love it. This is a game that it works for adults and kids, and you can play with adults, with kids, and you don't feel like you're your brain is bored because you're playing a kid's game. It really is a fun dexterity game. Highly recommend it. The Bluey Keepy Uppy game based on Loop and Louie. So very, very fun game. All right. That's it for Tabletop Time. And that's it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Sara Zaidi, thank you so much for being here. It's been a blast talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me. Always love geeking out with friends. So thank you again.
Absolutely wonderful. Hey, tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff that you do online.
You can find us at Apex Legends. You can find me on Twitter at I am Hurt Reynolds. So yeah, nonsense names.
Hurt Reynolds. One of the coolest handles I've heard in a while. I am Hurt Reynolds.
My in-game name is Pariah Carey. So I have dozens of these names.
I love it. Amazing. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I just had the latest installment of my newsletter, Let's Chat Games, which folks can find at christianspicer.substack.com. Go out, I think it was last Friday, but you can still find it there, the archive. And it was about convenience is king, and something we've talked about on this show before, Jeff, and you all talk about on Filmcast as well, the idea of streaming and how it's kind of not the best quality, but you do it because you have it. And I'm kind of walking through my thoughts on that as it relates to gaming and the various ways that convenience perhaps can trump other ways to play and how we feel about it. It's a very conversational newsletter. I always reply to everybody who replies back. I love getting those thoughts. So folks can find that there. And then, I'm excited for basketball finals. Not what I'm, you know, it's not a parting gift. It's just, what am I doing in these
couple
of days here? Pretty fun.
Dallas,
pretty
fun. What do you think? Mavs?
Yeah, I do.
That's
think
how
so.
I feel too.
If you had asked me before, I would have said Timberwolves, but not anymore. not anymore. Because I thought they looked really good.
Built to beat the Nuggets and not anyone else.
Yeah, they dismantled the Nuggets, and the Nuggets dismantled the Lakers, and it felt like swallowed a thing to catch the fly. Why'd she swallow the fly? And it was like, oh, to lose to Dallas is why she swallowed the fly.
Yeah.
But I love playoff basketball. Neither here nor there. Jeff.
I mean, Boston looks good too.
They do. And they're totally retooled and chomping at the bit. What about you, my friend? What do you got going?
Well, you can always follow me on socials. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I have other shows you can check out. Why not hear me talk about movies and TV shows on the Filmcast or Science? It's a comedy science show called We Have Concerns. Also, sports on the Fan Controlled Show. All of the above, available wherever you get fine podcasts. Let's wrap it up, guys. What do you say? Let's do our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Sara, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I totally do. My first suggestion are the B-tier, like History, Discovery Channel reality shows. They are incredible. Specifically, The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. It's like a real life, low budget Ghostbusters. Like, imagine just a team of random researchers in the middle of Utah trying to figure out why all this weird stuff's happening. And that's like the entire show. And it is actually really cool because there's a ton of like strange phenomena that can't be explained, but it is replicated. And then you have the mysterious military helicopters fly over. It is like shockingly riveting TV, and I love it because it's such low stakes thing. They're like, oh, this UAP flew over again, and then they'll do the grand reveals after they do their experiments, which, spoiler alert, often consists of shooting rockets at the sky. Like, amazing. It is actually a really compelling show.
Amazing. That's The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. All right, and you have another one.
The new one is a book called The Ninth House. It's an excellent series. It's basically kind of like adult Harry Potter meets the occult. It's really cool. It's blended with history. It follows this girl who's going to school at Yale, I believe. Yeah, at Yale. And there's a lot of like historical real life people that are mixed in with this fantastical world of magic and the occult. Really well done. Book two just came out last year. Cannot wait for book three. It's the final in the series. Strong recommend for that one.
The Ninth House is that's called. Yes.
And then my final recommendation is Formula One. Jeff, we got to get you into it. Watch some Drive to Survive.
I guess so.
It's really good.
Yeah. All right. Drive to Survive. I will check it out. I will check it out. I can't guarantee I'm going to like it, but I will check it out. all right. Christian, what is your parting gift?
Inspired from the newsletter, as I was talking about, convenience is king and how we stream all our music and stuff. Also, our friend Kyle, my friend Kyle, everybody's friend Kyle. Kyle reminded me of lossless music and streaming, while still not as good as what you can get other ways. This is my PSA to folks that if you're on Apple Music and I believe other services as well, lossless is often an opt-in. That if you had been a subscriber to a service for a while, you might not have gone into settings and turned on. Turn it on. It makes it better, and you have it, especially on Apple Music. It's included as part of your subscription already. Turn it on. You can have it turned off for cellular use, but on for when you're on Wi-Fi if you don't want to use that data or whatnot. But lossless music, if you're streaming your music. And then speaking of music, the new Kids on the Block album, Still Kids. Oh my. I texted this to you individually, Jeff, because I know we've been doing this show long enough that parting gifts, you just tune me out. You're like, yeah, Christian's doing another music parting gift.
Yeah.
It's such a good, it's just like an album of the summer. Every song could be the credit song to an 80s movie. Like, you start doing karate at some part during the songs. Like, it's just a summer album, and every song is about like falling in love. Even spoiler for the album, because it is an album,
even like the last, I think it's the last song, it's about like a breakup. It's still like, but I still love you. Oh, every song, it's just like bubblegum pop at the at its best. Clearly NKOTB is having fun with it. Still kids. It's got like, it's 80s inspired, like them from before inspired, but it clearly has learned from bands like The Midnight. Like it has, it feels weird to say modern 80s influences in it, but it's like, you know, updated of what people look back and think of as the 80s now. Synth riffs, keyboards, a saxophone. Oh, it's, I mean, it is just bubblegum. It's great. Sarah, have you listened to this album? I see you.
I have not, but you had me at synth riffs and saxophones. In. 1000% in.
Do it.
Say no more.
Give it a stream. Still
well,
kids.
Also, if you've never heard of The Midnight, let us bring you into the fold of The Midnight.
Do tell.
It's our favorite, yes. Our favorite band here on the show. The Midnight is peak synthwave. You won't find any better. We both absolutely adore this band. I've seen them live multiple times.
They're
the
very
Midnight.
Good.
Any album, doesn't matter. You will absolutely adore.
Yes.
But I did check out Still Kids, which, by the way, that's a great title.
So
it's a great title, especially for what this album is. Like, they're clearly doing a nostalgia play throwback.
My wife is actually going to see New Kids on the Block in this summer and like next month, I think. And awesome. I told her, I was like, Christian told me the new album is good. And she went, oh, are they going to be doing new stuff?
I bet they'll do two songs from the new album and the rest will be
Sure they'll still be hanging tough, honey. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
Anyway, very fun. My parting gift, if you're like me and the summer, maybe you're not slipping and sliding anymore, but you're probably going to still have some water-based fun. And if you've got children, one of my biggest frustrations is how much fun they love with the water balloons, which means dad's out in the backyard an hour later picking up little pieces of plastic, shredded water balloon. Oh, it's so frustrating. Pick up the balloons, kids, I say. They're already inside eating snacks. And there's a dad's out in the back hurting his back. Picking up the anyway, there's a thing that I've discovered that exists that are permanent water balloons, reusable water balloons. And we just got them recently. I was skeptical. I'll be honest. I was skeptical that a reusable water balloon would be worth anything. They're actually a real clever invention. I don't have either of you guys seen these things?
No.
We've played with them a little bit, yes.
So this is it. Imagine a sphere that is cut down the middle and can open in half. And it's kind of, it's flimsy and squishy, but it has little, tiny little magnets on that seam so that when it's closed, it stays together, but you can easily pop it open. What you do is you pop it open, spread it open in half and drop it into standing water. And then it closes on its own and the water gets trapped inside. And then you throw this little sack, sphere, at someone. And when it hits them, it pops open and the water explodes. And then you just pick up the thing and repeat.
That
pretty cool.
It motivates the kids to do the picking up because they want to refill it.
Exactly.
Like that's the key. Because otherwise, the parent's still picking it up.
Exactly. But
they want to pick up the shell to refill it to throw it again.
It's not garbage. It's not, well, pick it up and throw it in the garbage. It's, pick it up so you can play next time. And we just filled a cooler up with water as the refill station. And you just run over, you fill your next water balloon up, you throw it. And good fun. The only, the only minor downside is that sometimes it'll smack you and not open.
An unopened reusable water balloon hurts worse than an unpopped water balloon, if that makes
true.
Sense.
This is true. But not much more. I mean, there's only a few tears. And that was mostly for
and you
dad.
Just fill those up.
Yeah, exactly. So reusable water balloons. There you go. And there's less waste. It's good fun. All right. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes all the way from Lincoln, England. It comes from Colin B., who says, hey, guys, this parting gift suggestion is one I'm 99% sure has featured previously, but I feel compelled to write in again after watching their latest video. The parting gift is the YouTuber Summoning Salt, who primarily makes videos detailing the world record history of various video games. Their latest video is on the world record history of Tetris for the NES, and it is an incredible story. It starts with a level that the original developers never intended anyone to get past and builds to the news story you may remember from a while back that someone finally beat Tetris. Each step the community went along the way is brilliantly detailed, and it shows the dedication, ingenuity, and skills it took. Now I really want to play Tetris Effect VR again. All the best, Colin B. Thanks, Colin B. I watched this. Oh, it is. You are right. It is riveting. Riveting. And the kid who broke, who quote unquote beat Tetris, is like 14 years old. And the techniques that they use of like, it's almost like breaking the sound barrier. It's like, oh, no one, we've reached the limit of what humans can do. And then somebody's like, well, what if I hold my hand like this on the controller? And like, oh no, humans can do it. And then like 20 people beat the record that no one could be, you know, it's like the 4 minute mile. It's like, once we realized we could do it, everybody could do it. It's the coolest. It's the coolest. So great parting gift. Again, that's called Summoning Salt. If you would like to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Sara Zaidi and Jeff and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Thanks to White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold, for composing our theme song. Our biggest thanks is to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They make the show possible. Without them, we wouldn't be doing this. So thank you, patrons, for supporting us. Our top tier patrons, our hype train patrons, they become video games. What? Yes. Christian, we got to talk about these games, these classic games that no one talks about anymore. That's why it falls to us to talk about these games. I'm talking about the Dwayne T. Robinson game.
Can you smell what Cooking Mama's precursor game is cooking? You know, because everybody associates Cooking Mama as like the cooking game and it's cooking in Legends of Zelda. But little known fact.
Yeah.
Dwayne T. Robinson's Kitchen. Incredible. Was it Atari 2600? I don't, NES? Just like rudimentary graphics, but the idea, and I don't want to say popular wrestler maybe got their catchphrase from playing this particular game as a youth. I'm not going to go.
I, you know, it was odd though that there was an entire cooking game where all you cook is tea.
Well, someone has to, you have, believe it or not, you don't just take leaves and dirt and put them in a cup to make tea. Yeah. That might be what it tastes like, but right. You actually have to cook down the leaves. You know, you have to dry them and get them in the dirty little thing that you then put in your dirty little water to drink your tea.
It was cool though, because every time as you finished, you know, if you got the high enough score, even back then they had just a little, the little sound bite that would play rudimentary. And he would say, "Tea is my middle name."
And I remember when you failed too, the other soundbite I remember would be like, "Who spilled the tea?" Which I feel like is why people say that now, like, "Oh, you spilling tea?" And it's like, well, I bet kids these days, search it up, kids, don't even know what that comes from. But of course, it comes from smelling what the Dwayne T. Robinson tea is
Dwayne
cooking.
Dwayne T. Robinson. Yeah. And man, the controls. So wild that you would, how you would do it, you know, back then, you know, they say that it was the Konami code that first did the up, up, down, down, left, right. But I remember brewing some sick tea with that series of button presses.
And I don't know if you've watched the documentary about how people broke that. Because again, it was kind of like Tetris. You thought you could only do it so fast.
Right.
But kids now have found a way to position the controller on a pillow under one arm as it's bent and really like make some tea.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Tea is my middle name.
Great Dwayne game. Robinson was my father's name. Call me Dwayne T. Robinson, which was like the longest. Most of that got muddied out, but I knew that's what it was saying.
I honestly, I was surprised that the sequel, Dwayne Coffee Robinson, didn't catch on.
What did catch on, though, and I do remember as a former inline skater myself and big in the X Games scene, was around the time we were getting Tony Hawk and inline skating and all those games, was Dwayne Energy Drink Robinson. And that was like, I remember, because this was like, again, the era where you had in Tony Hawk, you'd get off your skateboard and you'd climb around the city. And in Dwayne Energy Drink Robinson, like, you would just break into nuclear waste facilities and scoop it to make your energy drink.
Well, that was the problem with that game, is that, you know, when you're brewing tea, it's like up, you got to get all the different ingredients. And then Dwayne Energy Drink Robinson, it was just like, hold X to add sugar, you know, and you'd just be holding X for like 3 minutes at a time, you know.
But you're making it more extreme, so that's why it worked.
Because that's true.
It was the 90s.
The other game that we have to talk about. Do you remember Morgan W?
I remember never taking an L. I'll tell you that much.
That's right. Morgan W never takes an L.
Never
I
takes an L.
I personally took lots of L's in that game, because that game really was hard.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, it's not that it was hard. I was just not very good at it, I think. Because, you know, you always wanted to get better, or as I call it, more gains.
More gains.
For that W, you know?
You got to get – we used to always say – we'd wake up because we'd leave the console on overnight. This was before Quick Resume. And mm-hmm. we'd always – my brothers and I would look at each other and we'd say, good morning with Morgan. Like, it didn't rhyme, but we like would stretch it just enough to like, yeah, it's a good morning for Morgan. Like,
sure,
we'd go back and play. And we'd take W's. Only W's. Only dubs.
I took a lot of L's. Yeah, I was basically playing Leskin L instead of Morgan W.
We took very few Z's because we wanted to have a good morning with Morgan. Get those W's. Get those
dubs. You know, it was a second person shooter, which is weird, you know?
But the story was told from a third person perspective, which was even weirder for the narrative style.
Yeah. It's hard being a second person shooter because you're just the victim every time.
Which is why I was taking W's, because I kept losing, but that was the point of the game.
You're like, oh, I got shot. I guess that's what I'm supposed to do.
Coincidentally enough, that's also how I play Apex Legends. So it works out.
Yeah, it works out.
I still play that as a second person shooter.
Either way, excellent games. And we're so grateful.
W games, you might say, not even excellent games.
We thank Dwayne T. Robinson and Morgan W. for supporting the show at the Hype Train level. If you'd like to become a Hype Train level patron and have your name immortalized as a video game, go to patreon.com/DLCpod. All right, that's it for this week. Thanks again. We'll see you next time. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.